जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवृधारि, गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवृधारि, जसोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, जसोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, जामुन थीरावन चाधी, जामुन थीरावन चाधी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवृधारी, गोपी जन बल्लभ गिरिवृधारी, जसोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, जसोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन, जामुन थीरावन चाधी, जामुन थीरावन चाधी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, Tarasata Sri Srimad His Divine Grace, Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki, Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda Ki, Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Samvita Bhaktavrinda Ki, Jainatai Gorpemanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Text 1 from chapter 29. Talks between Narada King Prachini Bari. Prachini Bahir Uvacha. Bhagavanste Vachos Mabhir. Nasamyag Avagamyate. Kavayas tad vigyananti navayam karma mohitaha prachina bharhir uvacha bhagavanste vachosmabhir nasamyag avagamyate kavayastad vigyananti navayam karma mohitaha. Prachina bharhir uvacha Bhagavanste vachosmabhir na samyag avagamyate kavayas tad vigyananti navayam karma mohitaha. Prachina bharhir uvacha bhagavanste vachosmabhir na samyag avagamyate kavayas tad vigyananti navayam karma mohitaha. Ladies, Prachina Bharhir Uvacha Bhagavanste Vachosmabhir Nasamyag Avagamyate One more, please. Prachini bharhir uvacha Prachina Bharhi Uvacha. King Prachini Bharhi said, Bhagavan, O my Lord, Te your Vachaha words Asambhihi by us. Na never. Samyak, perfectly, avagamyate, are understood. Kavayaha, those who are expert. Tat, that. Ajananti, can understand. Na, never. Vayam, we. Karma, by fruitive activities. Mohitaha, enchanted. King Prachinibari replied, "My dear Lord, we could not appreciate completely the purport of your allegorical story of King Puranjana. Actually, those who are perfect in spiritual knowledge can understand. But for us, who are overly attached to fruitive activities, to realize the purport of your story is very difficult." Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita 7.13, Lord Krishna says, Jibir gunamayair bhavayair ebi sarvam idam jagat mohitam nabhi janati mam ebyak param avyayam. And the translation, deluded by the three modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, the whole world does not know me, whom above the modes and inexhaustible. Generally, people are enchanted by the three modes of material nature and therefore practically unable to understand that behind all materialistic activities is, in the cosmic manifestation, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Generally, when people are engaged in sinful or pious activities, they are not perfect in knowledge of devotional service. The allegorical story narrated by Narada Muni to King Barhishman is especially meant to engage conditioned souls in devotional service. The entire story, narrated allegorically, is easily understood by a person in devotional service, but those who are engaged not in devotional service, but in sense gratification, cannot perfectly understand it. That is admitted by King Barhishman. Then the last paragraph is one sentence. This 29th chapter describes that by too much attachment for women, one becomes a woman in the next life, but a person who associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his representative becomes free from all material attachments and is thus liberated. I was pausing because that's what chapter 28 speaks about, and we're in a new chapter. So, Prachina Barhir Uvacha Bhagavangs Te Vacho Smabhir Nasamyag Avagamyate Kavayas Tad Vigyananti Na Vayam Karma Mohitaha. King Prachinibhari replied, "My Lord, we could not appreciate completely the purport of your allegorical story of King Puranjana. Actually, those who are perfect in spiritual knowledge can understand, but for us, who are overly attached to fruitive activities, to realize the purport of your story is very difficult." Narada is being addressed as Bhagavan. In one sense, that's contradictory to what Prabhupada traditionally spoke about the use of the term Bhagavan. It's appropriate for the Supreme Personality of Godhead only. In fact, he spoke this way, that when Vyasadeva wrote Bhagavad Gita, he didn't say Sri Krishna Uvacha, he said Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Then he gave the explanation that there may be many persons with the name Krishna. We know some people named Krishna. One of our congregation members is named Krishna. So Sri Krishna Uvacha might indicate somebody named Krishna. But Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, there's only one. That's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore the term Bhagavan, this is Prabhupada's teaching, I heard many times, is applicable to the Supreme Personality of Godhead only. As, and similarly, one may address a demigod as Ishwara, but there's only one Parameshwara, one Supreme Controller. We may address a living entity as Brahman, but there's one Parabrahman, and so on. There's one Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, the exception is sometimes even Vyasadeva refers to a great devotee, Narada, and sometimes even Lord Shiva, in his capacity as a great devotee, is also addressed as Bhagavan. And we should have a clear understanding what that means. When Narada is addressed as Bhagavan, he's not the source of everything. Aham sarvasya prabhavo, that's Narada. No. Krishna is that person, the source of everything, and Narada is intimate associate of Krishna, pure devotee of Krishna. So the pure devotee of Krishna, intimately representing Krishna, he may sometimes also be addressed as Bhagavan, and one should be clear what that means when we do that. Like the statements in the Bhagavata, the Nectar of Devotion, characteristics of pure devotional service, that chapter that describes the position of guru. And it speaks in that kind of language that one should accept the spiritual master as Krishna, as God, but the understanding is the intimate servant or confidential servant, conducting oneself in a service that the respect that goes to God goes to the representative of God. Like the ambassador from a country is respected like the country, although he's not the country, he's the representative of the country, and so all respect goes to the ambassador. And similarly, if the ambassador is given some gift, doesn't belong to the ambassador, it goes to the country. If the ambassador pockets something that's a gift for the country, he not only loses his job, he'll be in jail. It's illegal. The gift is for the country. So if some, it's like a king, more clearly, if some gift is given to a king through the representative of the king, it goes to the king's treasury. And even the king's treasury is not the property of the king. It's in the case of the king, he's the representative of the personality of Godhead. So his understanding should be, it's the property of God. Just like if someone gives something to the deity, it's the property of the deity. And those that may have access to the jewelry of the deity or whatever it is of that's the deity property, it's the deity property. There was some years ago, there was a scandal where I can't remember if it was Tirupati or Sri Rangam, one of those, you know, very wonderful, respectable, elevated places of worship. There was one Brahmin who had three daughters, and he had to arrange for the marriage of his three daughters, and he didn't have the capacity to arrange for the marriage of three daughters, dowry, etc., because that's part of the system of India. And so what he did was he took some property of the deity and he took it to a pawn shop. But he didn't do a local pawn shop. He went all the way to Bombay to get something in money in exchange for the jewelry of the deity. When he took it to the pawn shop man said, "I have to price it. Come back later in the afternoon." It turned out that man, that very, out of all the however many pawn shops there are in Bombay, it was the very man that donated that jewelry item to the deity. So when he came back to find out what the price was, the police were there and arrested him. The Supreme Lord caught him with his hand in the cookie jar. He learned a lesson, never to be forgotten, I'm sure. The Supreme Lord is omniscient. You can't cheat Krishna. That which belongs to Krishna belongs to Krishna. So extend that in what doesn't belong to Krishna. Another lesson related to this, Prabhupada said that when, this is for our Sankirtan devotees, it's Monday morning, so please try to stay awake. It's a Sankirtan story. Somebody on Sankirtan gives a donation to the Sankirtan devotee. And provided the Sankirtan devotee doesn't have two pockets, he has only the Krishna pocket, it goes to Krishna. And that donation given by the public person that doesn't know about the Krishna, they just gave a donation, and it's used in Krishna's service. Prabhupada says that person gets as much benefit, equal benefit, as the pujari who's rendering the service to the deity. So, very merciful service. That doesn't mean just go and loot and ransack and give everything to the deity. Although, I just heard Prabhupada speak about, it was a morning walk conversation in Juhu, and he was speaking about Marwaris. Those of us from America don't know what that means. Those of you from India, you know what that means. Then he was chuckling and saying, Marwaris, they'll do anything to get money. They don't have, there's no, you know, no rules. But they're very charitable, and they give very liberally to Krishna. And they understand from the Vedic injunction that their earning becomes purified, the money becomes purified by giving to Krishna. So they give charitably. And that's just part of the culture with which they operate. Anything to get money and give liberally to the devotees of the Lord and Krishna. So everything is the property of Krishna. But specifically, for practical purposes, I mean, aside from transcendental reality, for practical purposes, the property of the deity is the property of the deity. And those who are serving in a temple, or those of you that are visiting us, while you're visiting us, you're also serving in a temple. Everything is the property of the deity. So you have your own deity where you're based, and everything that you receive goes to Krishna. And that way, you're a transparent representative. And that's a very important position for souls that have forgotten Krishna, don't know about Krishna, that aren't interested to know about Krishna, frankly. That's why they're in this material world. But to help move them to the position of transcendence, some representing Krishna activity is needed, and then someone can move little by little progressively to that position. And that's something very similar in a different way that Narada is doing with the king. The king is, it was too much attached to the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. And he's in a line of great Vaishnavas. In fact, it's described specifically that Narada went there because he had delivered everybody else in that line of great kings, from Swayambhuva Manu and Uttanapada and Dhruva Maharaj and down the line. So here's someone down the line that is, he kind of lost it, he slipped. And he was religious, but too much attached. And so Narada came to deliver him. And in delivering him, he saw the situation. And being expert, he knew how to deal with the situation. He spoke something indirectly or allegorical. It's sometimes asked, is the Bhagavatam to be taken literal, or is the Bhagavatam to be taken allegorical? And the answer is to be taken literally. However, there are some sections in the Bhagavatam that are deliberately and explicitly allegorical to help persons that are too much attached to understand transcendental reality. The two that come to mind are this one, the King Paranjan story, and where another is where, again, Narada is speaking to the Haryashvas and Savalashvas, specifically the Haryashvas. He gives some riddle, a puzzle, an enigmatic description of a place. And his purpose is slightly different. His purpose was to see, are they qualified to become situated in renunciation, in renounced order of life, or, as their father had indicated to them, to become involved in family life and to become prajapatis, help to produce good praja to populate the earth planet that Lord Brahma has created, and part of what he was to assist them with, assist Lord Brahma with, was create good praja, daksha. So in the case of the Haryashvas, he only spoke a few lines, and immediately the Haryashvas could understand, and they explained what it meant, what he was indicating. So Narada could understand these people are qualified. And in the case of King Prajinibari, he could understand he's not qualified. Because even when he told the story, he couldn't understand. And because he's an honest man, some people are dishonest, but King Prajinibari was honest, and he said, I don't understand. And why is it that one can understand and another can't understand? And the answer is too much attachment to the bodily conception of life, or extend that, and that is too much attachment to fruitive activities, because fruitive activities flow from the bodily conception of life. Fruitive activities, in one sense, flows from passion. And ignorance is the bodily conception of life, but, you know, they're great companions, passion and ignorance. Bodily conception of life and fruitive activities. Fruitive activities and the bodily conception of life, they're like brothers. From having the same mother, the modes of nature. specifically the modes of passion and the modes of ignorance, fruitive activities, and bodily conception of life. So what's being said here by King Prachinibari is said very similarly by Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto. Natevi dusvarta katimhi Vishnu durashaya ye bahir arta maninas. Arta maninas. Arta means, what does arta mean? Something of value. Generally, people, it's translated as economic development, prosperity. So like dharma, artha, kama, moksha. People do dharma for the purpose of getting artha. They want prosperity. So I'll go to place of worship and do worship so that I'll get piety. When I get piety, it's for prosperity. And the prosperity is used for kama, sense gratification. So something, but that's because that's something they value. They value stuff, sense objects, so that I can enjoy sense objects, or the means to get, acquire the sense objects, namely piety. So those are more in the mode of goodness, but still, you know, nice, hefty, robust amount of passion. Put the two together and you get religious activity that's aimed at material, improving one's material situation, prosperity, economic prosperity, or good education, or good birth, or good beauty, you know, beyond this life, another birth that'll be in the heavenly realm with great beauty and great opulence and so forth. Or even in this life, so I can prosper. Bahir artha means, bahir means outside. Bahir nishingo hridaye nishingo. Nishingadeva is everywhere. That's what Prahlad told his father. Where is this Vishnu? And Prahlad's answer was, he's everywhere, Father. Is he in this pillar? There he is, right there. He's in the pillar. He was in the pillar. But bahir means outside. So bahir artha maninas, those who carry the conception in their mind that the goal of life is bahir artha, get things, objects of sense gratification, get prosperity, something out there. My happiness is out there. There's no happiness within, and so I'm looking for happiness out there. But happiness never happens because happiness is within. But one continues to chase the rainbow. And there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, and you just keep chasing and chasing. And so, natte vidu, such persons, Prahlad Maharaj says, it's impossible for them to understand the goal of life. Natte vidu. Then he says what the goal of life is. But no problem, Hiranyakashipu won't get it anyways. Svartha katim hi Vishnu. His sva artha, there it is again. His real purpose of life or value of life is Vishnu, serving Vishnu. But persons who are too attached can't get it. So King Prachinibari can't understand what Narada had just explained, the allegorical story that he just explained, because Navayam karma mohitaha. We are, he's plural, but it's him. karma mohitaha. By fruitive activities, I'm bewildered. Moha. He's translated here, enchanted. He cannot see the reality. And he knows he can't see the reality because of Narada's association. Before, he wasn't so tuned into, I'm not seeing reality. He was just chasing fruitive activities, religious fruitive activities, karmakanda rituals. But because of that enchantment with fruitive activities, I can't understand the allegorical presentation you've just given. But the purpose, so go back now, the purpose of the allegorical presentation was, let's hear what Prabhupada says. The entire story, narrated allegorically, is easily understood by a person in devotional service. But those who are not engaged in devotional service, but in sense gratification, cannot perfectly understand it. What's the consequence? The allegorical King Puranjana is King Prajinibari. Or a generic version, just somebody who wants to be an enjoyer in the material world. And he has everything, even the king, Pranjana, has everything, but he's still not happy. And the piece that's missing is he needs a queen. And in the allegorical rendering, the queen, the one that he ends up accepting as a queen, is material intelligence. To enjoy stuff out there, you need material intelligence, or the other way around. Material intelligence's purpose is to help you get enjoyment, or at least try. From senses, meeting sense objects, how to hook the senses together with the sense objects. You do it this way, you get some happiness. You do it that way, you get some happiness. Except there's never happiness. Flickering phantasmagoria. That's not what happiness is. That's the meaning to say there's no happiness. Happiness is something that's sat. It's enduring. There's no beginning and no end, and it's ever increasing. That's happiness. And this other thing is not that. It's temporary, it's illusory, it's never bringing satisfaction to the self. Dushparena nalena cha. It's insatiable and it burns like fire. That's sense gratification. That's happiness. You're never satisfied and it burns like fire. And we call that happiness. That's Maya. Maya says, this is happiness. I remember one hot July summer morning class Prabhupada was giving, explaining in Brooklyn, explaining Maya is illusory happiness, Maya Sukha, Maya Sukhaya, Param Am. What is the rest of the verse? Maya Sukha. Anyway, Maya Sukha, a false happiness. And Prabhupada then explained, Maya is beckoning. Come on and enjoy me. Come on and enjoy me so I can kick you in the face. Come on and enjoy me so I can kick you in the face. Doesn't sound like enjoyment, but when that beckoning is there, the call of Maya, one leaves the spiritual position and goes to the material position, the Maya position. Prabhupada was asked, what is the meaning of prapekshatmaka shakti? That's a technical question. It's found in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and they had read it. And so the devotee asked, can you give an example of prapekshatmika shakti? And Prabhupada said, throwing potency. And then the example he gave was, someone is practicing Krishna consciousness, and Maya comes along, this prapekshatmika shakti comes along, this one of the divisions of Maya, illusory potency, comes along and says, why are you serving Krishna? Come over here and you can enjoy. And the person says, yes, I can enjoy. And they leave devotional service. That is prapekshatmika shakti, the throwing potency. And then he explained the avaranatmika shakti, the covering potency, is one is engaged in sense gratification and thinks it's nice. And then he gave examples. The hog is eating stool, and he thinks it's nice. Then he gave an example. He said, I learned this when I was a young boy. My father had someone who assisted him in the household. And one day, my father went to the man's place because he wanted to express his gratitude for his service, very loyal service in the household. Something like, you know, a servant in the house. So he went to the house, and the man was living in, Prabhupada described, in abject poverty. It was hardly, you know, the size of a room that was his house. And then Prabhupada said, I spoke to the man and said, why did you come live with us in Calcutta? And the man said, I can't leave. This is my home. And then Prabhupada said, then I could understand. Avaranatmika shakti. Even the condition is miserable. One is thinking it's very nice. Of course, living in Calcutta is also miserable. And living in the material world is miserable. But that's the avaranatmika shakti. Throwing and covering potency. So King Pachini Bari, he's in this, he's got both. He's got the double whammy. The throwing potency has already got him in the material condition, and the avaranatmika shakti is, I think it's nice. And that's this last line in the Sanskrit. Karma mohitaha. Because of the enchantment of Maya, come on and enjoy me, come on and enjoy me. I'm thinking it's very nice. And because I'm thinking it's very nice, I can't understand your story. But the material intelligence is ruling. So he marries the queen, but he's dictated to by the queen, although he's the king. And the conditioned soul is dictated to by material intelligence. We require the assistance of our material intelligence, and not only the assistance to get sense gratification, but material intelligence then rules, and we think we're very intelligent, when in fact the material intelligence is entangling us further and further and further. But we're enchanted by material intelligence. We want more. 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 Because it will then get us more illusioned. That's the covering potency. Or in the allegory, it's, as Prabhupada writes in the last sentence of this purport, this 29th chapter describes that by too much attachment for women, one becomes a woman in his next life. But a person who associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead or his representative becomes free from all attachments, all material attachments, and thus is liberated. So it's devotional service. He's, as Prabhupada said above in the previous paragraph, the whole purpose of the allegory is to glorify and bring the hearer to the position of devotional service. And therefore, although it's allegorical, it's transcendental, because the person speaking is Narada. The purpose of his speaking is transcendental. The sound vibration, although it's about a materialistic person, and is even allegorical, it's like, you know, reflection of a reflection of a reflection. But the purpose of it is to bring one to devotional service. And it's effective. King Prajini Bari at the end becomes, he gives up his fruitive activities, as did his sons, the Prachetas. But the Prachetas did it in a different way because they were not attached to fruitive activities. So they could take the direct method of hearing and praying and worshipping, and they became perfected souls. King Prachini Bari took a little longer. But similar thing happened with Uttanapada previously. Uttanapada, the father of Dhruva, he was too attached. He was too attached to his queen. So Ruchi. And so as a result of his attachment to his queen, he allowed his son to be rudely, viciously insulted. He didn't want to say anything because he might lose some favors from his queen. So he didn't say anything. And that was double hurtful to Dhruva. One thing is to have his stepmother speak something mean and cruel and nasty. But then he turned and looked at his father, and his father remained silent. And he just burst into tears and ran from the palace. Dhruva became liberated before his father. When Narada met with Dhruva in the forest, he also tested Dhruva, but he saw he was very determined. So he gave him the means to achieve spiritual perfection. Then Narada went to see his father. Narada didn't even give transcendental knowledge to Uttanapada because he had beans in his ears. He couldn't hear. He wasn't capable. He was too attached. Something like King Chuchaketu. Angira didn't give him transcendental knowledge until he let go of his attachment by circumstance. So he went to Uttanapada, knowing that Uttanapada felt terrible. Imagine being a parent and your son is horribly insulted and you do nothing, and he runs away from home into the forest. Who knows if he would ever even see him again? He was feeling awful, terrible. But there was nothing he could do. So Narada went and told him, "My dear king, don't worry. Very shortly, your son's going to achieve spiritual perfection. So he's perfectly safe. In fact, he'll come back and liberate you. So give up your lamentation. He'll be back, I reassure you." So his father, his grief was mitigated to some degree. And when Dhruva came back, Dhruva's presence was so elevated that his father gave up his attachments and left and went to the forest and followed the example of Dhruva. Narada's expert. But you can't be expert or even, you know, a little capable if there's a material attachment. And when there's material attachment, it's shackles. You're imprisoned by Maya. So how do you get free from shackles? You have to have somebody that's free from shackles come along and free you. Someone not tied up by the ropes of the modes of nature. That's what Narada's program is. releasing people from the bondage of the modes of nature. And when that situation is there where one is freed from the modes of nature, then one can see things properly because you're not attached. And that's the verse that Prabhupada quotes from 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. The opposite, tribir gunamayir bhavayir abhi sarva midam jagat mohitam nabhi janati mam ebyak param avyayam. Not knowing Krishna's position, because they're bewildered by the modes of nature, they do not know my transcendental position, which is above the modes and inexhaustible. It's a spiritual principle that one of Prabhupada's favorite punching bags was the scientist. And he'd let him have it, saying, they're rascals. And the evidence for that is they don't accept the personality of Godhead. So Krishna says that such persons are rascals, and would quote the verse. But why is it? It's not that, and therefore, they're not scientists. They're rascals. Because a scientist, his point is one who knows. And he didn't give the etymology of the word, but science comes from the Latin word scire, which means to know. So if they don't know, but they're saying that they know, they're cheaters and rascals. And the scientist says, perhaps, maybe. And then the next year it's that changes, and then that changes, and that changes. That's not knowing. That's not science. That's cheating. So better you say you don't know. That's honest. Than to say, this is what it is, or perhaps maybe. And they cannot know. It's very simple. They cannot know the soul or the supreme soul by their empiric process. It's not possible. With the agency of the senses, or extending the senses by microscopes and telescopes or other kind of scopes or atom smashers and see, you know, what's in the atom, they'll never find the soul, because they're using that which cannot extend into the realm beyond matter. And Krishna's saying he's beyond matter. And so those who are bewildered by the modes of nature, they'll never know Krishna's position. So how do you know Krishna's position? Through devotional service. The whole purpose of the allegory was to bring King Prachinibari to devotional service, and then he could know. And otherwise you can't know. And it's not defiant. It's just fact. It's how the universe works. And how do you know that's the way the universe works? Because Krishna says so. Well, the scientist doesn't say so. And this, you know, the scientists are rascal. That's just categorically, just rather than arguing the point of what the scientist says, they're just in principle. They cannot. It's just as the verse is describing from the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. They can't know. And there's a way that they can know. There's a way that King Prachinibari can know, although his position is he doesn't know. And he can't know. As long as his mind is bewildered by the modes of nature and these two things, fruitive activities and bodily conception of life. Really, that's the building block. You put the bricks and the cement together, and you get Maya's fortress. Bodily conception of life and fruit of activity, mode of ignorance and mode of passion and stir. You get material life. And one who's situated in that concept, bahir artamanina, they'll never know. Na te vidu svartakatim hi Vishnu. Durashaya. Asha means their hope or desire. Durashaya. They're bashed by their own hopes. Beating themselves up. Durashaya, a bahir artamaninas. The goal of life would just slip right past them, life after life. And the destination for one who receives the human form of life and doesn't use it for its intended purpose, for self-realization, is not a pretty picture, the consequences. But they don't know. What a great misfortune. And conversely, what a great responsibility those who know have. I mean, let's just assume that none of us here are perfected souls. I think it's a safe assumption. We know something. We have a clue. We're hearing it again and again, and it's kind of a little bit is seeping in, and we know something. We know something more than what we, you know, the acceptance of illusion previously. And so it's beyond just neutral. There's something that we know. Now, what do you do with that something that you know? You have to use it in your own life, but you also have to give it to others. It's a natural thing. And as you give it to others, the capacity to know increases. The additional mercy comes into your life. You don't have to claim to be a perfected being. Do your best to be at least, you know, proper representative of the disciplic succession, proper conduct, proper speech. But pass on the message in a honest, respectable manner, as a service, and that your realization will also grow. That's what we're enjoined to do. King Prajinibari, he hasn't gotten there yet. He's just hearing from Narada. Once he becomes fixed in understanding, freed from the attachment of fruitive activities, through this allegorical story, so we're getting that this chapter is Narada explains the allegory. And, you know, so not just in case the king didn't get it. The king say, I didn't get it. So he's going to explain the allegory. And, you know, piece by piece, the whole story is going to be retold with the message of the story. It's really nice. Really nice section. Have a great time studying chapter 29 of Canto 4. Any comments? Questions?
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for your class. I was thinking that sometimes it's not just enough that we know. For example, we may be speaking with someone and they may be struggling with a particular attachment, and we may point out that, you know, this may be the cause, and it may not have any effect. Whereas the same thing, when somebody who actually, let's call it secret force X, has that secret force.
What was the last part? When they're on the other hand, what happens?
On the other hand, when somebody has some, like, the secret force, this...
Secret force.
Yes, the power of devotion or bhakti
power
in their heart.
Power of devotion, bhakti, okay.
They say the same thing.
Purity is the force, in other words.
I'm sorry?
Purity is the force.
Okay, that's what I was indicating. I was trying to figure out what that...
So, what to do? Speak the message anyway. But do your best, two things. Do your best to speak it transparently. Not like a stick in your hand and pow, pow. But transparently. Just as an instrument of Krishna. Like the example yesterday, the postal peon. Here's a nice message. I read it. It's really fantastic. Here, let me share it with you. It's just an instrument of Krishna. That will help self-purification. Presenting the message, and especially trying to present the message in the right mood, in the humble mood of just being an instrument, just a service, just being a servant. Then another is a message of book distribution. That is, let Prabhupada say it to them. Book distribution is powerful. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't say anything, but you know, we should say something. But the something that we should say should be the transparent representation, as best we can, of what Prabhupada has presented in his Bhaktivedanta purports, and then we express. But then give people the opportunity to hear our founder Acharya in his rendering directly. But what you're saying is true. There's great force or potency in purity. So full circle around. What do? We try to become pure. Don't wait until you become pure before you try to be an instrument of Krishna's or Prabhupada's message. But parallel, simultaneously, give the message as part of your purification and do all the other things that make up a life that enhances purity. We apply those things in our life as much as we can to achieve purity. So then we're there's more, as you say, force or effect. Glenn, you have something?
My question has to do with scientists.
With what?
Scientists? And
rascals.
What is their function, or do they have a useful function for us?
Yeah, bewildering the minds of conditioned souls. That's largely. It's exhibiting different tendencies. One tendency is to try to know, but try to know through an ascending process. You can't know. At least you can't know transcendental reality. You can't know transcendental reality. And even this realm, because the senses are imperfect and tendency to make mistakes and cheating others and the defects of the conditioned soul, even things within the material realm cannot be correctly known by nature of the process that's being used. So your question specifically is, what's the function? I mean, I guess, you know, see a nice example of how the ascending process is inadequate. One of the points that Prabhupada makes, I mentioned briefly, but they make some postulation of they either say this is a theory, or they say this is the way that it is. Either way, theory or this is the way that it is. And then after some time, they have another theory or another this is the way that it is. So for a person who's thoughtful, there's something either wrong or at least limiting with this process of knowing things by science. When I was growing up in high school, there was this talk about continental drift being ridiculed, you know, poo-poo on continental drift. I remember, you know, science teacher talking about it and going poo-poo. And then, you know, went to college and, you know, some time passed and I was reading some literature and now it's a fact. Continental drift is a fact. That's why there's mountains, because this piece of land broke off from that piece of land and crashed into another piece of land and up went a big mountain range. That's how we got mountain ranges, because of continental drift. Okay. What happened to, you know, what was poo-poo before is now reality. What happened? Science happened. Now we know more. And so wait some time and it's going to be something else and something else. So a function of the science is to help thoughtful people understand that ascending process has got its limitations. It's inherently problematic. It'll never be conclusive. There's a function. And for people who want to be in Maya, it gives them a boat to ride on. They can sail for a while and get in another boat and get in another boat and just keep sailing in Maya. That's a function. And feel good about themselves. Is that all right? So we'll help him. Oh, there we go.
I was also thinking of doctors who...
Doctors?
Right, who are depending on medical research to do their work. Well, it does, it changes. But is a doctor helpful or...?
Sure. You know, on some level, helpful, sure. But yet there's all kinds of examples where it's the opposite. Mm-hmm. You know, causes of patients' death is because of doctors. But you know, helpful towards what end is another question. Prolonging life or relieving one of some pain or something, for what purpose? Someone can engage in sense gratification or continue illusion. The real medicine is cures one of the disease of material existence. Like it's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita about Murari Gupta. He was a physician. Gupta is a name that indicates a particular caste where their profession is, they're physicians. One of the common professions is vaidya, or a physician. Murari Gupta not only healed people's illnesses, but he healed their material condition. He awakened in them pure devotion to Krishna. That's the best medicine. So it's helpful to limited. And in one sense, it can lead to what Prabhupada was very concerned with, was it can lead one to placing one's faith in the ascending process. Simply, science is going to enable me to live forever. Like, you know, Walt Disney, he had so much money, he had his body frozen, so that when they figure out how to make eternal life, they can thaw his body out and he can, you know, make some more movies, etc. Falsely placing faith in the ascending process. So it can be detrimental, medicine and science in that sense. And that's the sense that Prabhupada was most concerned about, false faith. He once said, or maybe more than once said, but one time he expressed that one of the greatest obstacles in presenting Krishna consciousness in the world today is the blind faith that people have in science. If a scientist says blah blah, then blah blah is accepted because they say blah blah, whatever that is. Or there's something that's stated in the scripture, and if it's confirmed by something the scientist says, then we can accept it more readily than simply because the Vedas state it. If there's scientific collaboration, we accept it. And if there's some scientific theory that's in contradiction to what the Vedic statement says, it disturbs our faith in the Vedas because the scientist says, so we have blind faith in the scientist. At least to some degree that's there. Again, Prabhupada indicated that's the greatest impediment or obstacle in spreading Krishna consciousness in the world today, the world that he was addressing. Anything else? Yes. It's a magical wand. You have to know how to work it. There's our magician.
It's mystical. Yeah. Marge, as you were mentioning about, just a couple of quick comments, and then I just had a question about the class. Okay. You mentioned that doctors often cause more harm than good. Actually, the third cause of death in the United States after cancer and heart disease is actually doctors, like infections in hospitals and things like that, or a botched surgery or something like that. Not that they're all bad. And also you mentioned that scientists, people have faith in science prolonging their life. And just a few weeks ago, they had a transhumanist conference in Moscow. And transhumanism is the belief that humans will use technology to become immortal or to extend their life. And many people who attended that were like the founder of Google and many of the people who run the society and shape the way people think. And one of the things they mentioned at that conference is they presented it as a new form of spirituality also. So in a sense, it is like their religion having faith.
Life extension. They called it a different name? What they call it? Trans?
They call it, the movement is called transhumanist or H+. Human plus.
H+. Yeah. Transhumanism.
Transhumanism.
Okay, I have to learn the buzzwords.
Transhumanism.
Transhumanism. Life extension, I've heard.
Yeah, and eventually to become immortal, beyond a human.
Oh, okay.
To become the next stage of evolution. Like transferring some of the ideas.
Sure, take the word transcendental and just put transhumanism.
So they say we don't exactly know what it is because we don't know what the post-human will be, but it's the movement towards there. For instance, shifting your memories into another body, for instance, into a computer or something like that, and shift your personality.
Of course,
they don't know who the person.
Okay.
Things like that.
Okay.
Or enhancing your eye, or your arm.
But we're chuckling, but there are people that are heavily invested in this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the head of Google is one of the persons.
Yeah, a lot of people. Ray Kurzweil, he's the famous writer who's really into it, and they asked him in an interview. Also, they said, "What if? Don't you think this is a bad thing? Like, this is going to be bad for humanity?" But he said that, they said, what about your children and things like that? You know, if everything becomes machines and humans become extinct. And he said, well, if in order to propagate knowledge, and I think Sariputta mentioned this too in a lecture once, because this has been around for a long time. And he said that in order to propagate knowledge, I'm willing to make that sacrifice in order to progress evolution, whatever the vague idea is.
Okay, now your question?
And my question was that the Bhagavatam mentions that a person who is too much attached to fruitive activities or sense gratification, he can't understand the allegories, the Bhagavatam. But what about people, what about Mayavadi sannyasis or yogis?
What about which one?
Mayavadi sannyasis or yogis who are purported to be detached, but they also don't understand.
There are things that they can understand that the attached materialist can't, and there are things that they can't understand that a Vaishnava can understand. You know, that's a line that you can be drawn in different places depending upon the transcendentalist. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Regarding the doctors, nowadays many of the institutions are going for a holistic approach.
Going for where?
Holistic approach to medical practices. Holistic.
Holistic.
For example, a patient is diagnosed with some disease and...
He's a doctor, by the way. He knows what he's talking about. Go ahead.
So he is given the options of choosing holistic approach or medical approach. So how does this holistic approach we have to understand?
What's your question? Well, how do we understand a holistic approach? Is that your question?
Yes, Maharaj.
Yes, that's
because,
your question?
If a patient is given an option of choosing.
I got that part. So the question is, how do we understand a holistic approach? That's your question?
Yes, Maharaj.
Well, it's like, excuse my, you know, maybe not pleasant reply, but to find a qualified physician, holistic or otherwise, is a difficult search. The speculative tendency prevails in holistic medicine as well. What passes for holistic medicine, I wouldn't subject myself to largely. There's all kinds of things. But now go to the other side, and there's a devotee who works for another hospital. Anyway, what's the one that has the big hospital that's based in Minneapolis, and they have a branch that's also in Mayo? So a devotee I know works for Mayo, and they're... for the past 15 years, more than a decade, they have somebody that's the head of that department, and you know, several things underneath that, the head of that department, and somebody opts for, I don't want surgery, then you know, they give them this other option that's part of Mayo, and you know, it's something like Harvard Medical School. They have to protect their name. They don't, they're very cautious about the gobbledygook that passes for holistic medicine. You know, that's something on the other side, but then something over on this side. How can they properly do it? How do you find a qualified Brahmin, for example, in the age of Kali? Answer: there aren't. Or, you know, most rare. So, how do we understand holistic medicine? You know, nice try, basically, in short. Even the science may be a science, like, say, Ayurveda. Where is the realized Ayurvedic physician? Or, let's say, the science of astrology. Okay, astrology's out there. Where do you find one who's actually in touch with Supersoul? Because that's what's required. There's some things that they're textbook, but it's not just textbook. It's being in touch with Supersoul. And how do you read this and read that and subtleties? Oh, that's my nice try. Back to this other question: are they helpful? You know, in certain ways they're helpful. They're also helpful in extending one's faith in the ascending process. Because, you know, where's the real purification, the thing that's actually going to heal? But what do you do if you have some ailment? Where are you going to find a qualified physician? not just, you know, one who's got a degree, but one who's a qualified physician. Where do you find a qualified head of state? Where do you find a qualified brahmana? Where do you... It's Kali Yuga. Difficult. Difficult. Anything the ladies side? Donna Kelly, anything? Comment?
You were mentioning that the Bhagavatam says Sri Bhagavan Ubacha,
yes,
instead of Sri Krishna Ubacha. So I was just wondering about the mood, because
the mood,
the Bhagavatam is meant for the Paramahamsas. So I was just wondering for those very elevated souls who are at that point where they're not so much relating to Krishna as God, but they're relating to Krishna as a lover or a friend or a child. But Bhagavatam is saying Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, so does that kind of mess with their mood, you know, when they're... I mean, even in the 10th canto, when Krishna is speaking and so many dialogues that are going on, it'll say, you know, Bhagavan Uvacha. So it's said that one's bhakti gets a little...
I'm not on that platform, so I can't say what their experience is when they read Bhagavad Gita. Maybe they read it in a way that we can't understand how they read it. You know, to say the question back in another way, someone who is on such a platform, a Paramahamsa platform, how do they deal with anybody or anything that's of this world? And then go up and, you know, something that's theistic and then something that's coming from God. You know, they see Krishna. They see Krishna everywhere. So Sri Bhagavan Uvacha is... This is... how to fill in with it, but they see Krishna. And how they see Krishna, and as he's presenting to Arjuna, who's acting as if he's one of us by Krishna's arrangement, how do they see that? They see Krishna. It's Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, but they see Krishna. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he saw Jagannath, he saw Krishna. We see Jagannath, he saw Krishna. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha sees Krishna. Someone else had their hand up back there? Oh, you have your hand up, okay. Last question.
Guru Maharaj, you were explaining that the combination of bodily conception and also bodily conception and
fruitive activities. Oh yeah, fruitive activities.
That combo doesn't basically allow someone to actually understand who's Krishna.
Yeah, they're Maya.
And that sort of describe, at least I can recognize myself, bodily conception, fruitive desires, and nevertheless, you know, we're able to understand, at least to take to devotional service. So if you can explain a little bit,
sure,
about that.
Sure, devotional service. That's the distinction. So mixed devotional service, not yet pure devotional service, but devotional service. And how is devotional service made possible? By descending mercy. So it's not just ascending, you're in the transit lounge. You're in between one place and another place, moving towards the realm of devotional service. Inclusive. That's the teaching of Rupa Goswami. Unmixed devotional service. That's the path that you're moving on. So there's some realization. But then go the other side, without the Bhaktivedanta purports and Narada explaining the allegory that he presented, can we understand what was, if we just didn't read the purport, just read the verses, and are we going to understand without the assistance of one who's, by whose association we're engaged in devotional service? And the answer is no, we wouldn't. So the medium is the devotional service by which there's some understanding. And keep going. Keep chanting. Keep hearing. Keep applying. Keep Cheto Darpana Mar, keep continue cleansing the soul by that cleansing process. And gradually. Fruitive desire, fruitive tendency can be dissolved. Just yesterday I read that nice description by Lord Kapiladeva, where he says there isn't another process that can dissolve material desires. It can hold them in place mechanically, but they'll spring up again. The stage of neutrality is repression. It's not cleansing. We'll continue the cleansing, and with that further understanding. It's proportionate. It's not a one or a zero through the medium of devotional service. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Today's meetings.